Hey there, conductors. If you've ever felt that you're not quite sure what to do next when you're studying a score, maybe you don't even know where to start with a difficult piece, maybe you study one piece too much and then you realize at the first rehearsal that you don't know another one well enough, or maybe you're a new conductor and you don't know what score study is, I'm excited to share that I'm finally publishing and sharing my score study checklist. I've been refining this for 12 years now, and I'm so excited to share it. It is going to walk you through my structure, my process to make sure that I learn every score that I need to learn well enough and so that nothing falls through the cracks. So it covers everything that you need to know. There's a link in the show notes. Go ahead and click it, sign up, and you'll get that score study checklist sent right to your email. You'll also get access to an 8-minute video of me explaining what each section is and how I use it to organize all the music that I need to learn. It's only 8 minutes, so it's not going to take you a whole hour to learn how to study better, how to put up a process for your score study, and how to make sure that nothing is falling through the cracks. So again, click the link in the show notes, and I hope to see you soon. Now, please enjoy this episode of Podium Time. Welcome to Podium Time, the podcast for conductors and students.
You really need to find comfort in who you are. There's great leadership in different types of behaviors. You know, you can be a super funny person. I am so not funny, but I'm who I am. You know, this is who it is, you know, and there are some people who are very quiet. So you can have people who are really loud. You may think that they're a great leader, right? And so I think that if people are comfortable in whatever way that they feel that they can get the information across, I think that that's a really important thing.
All righty. Well, welcome to Podium Time. Thanks so much for joining us today. Today we're here with Anna Edwards. Anna, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah. Thank you so much for inviting me. This is great.
Yeah, very excited. Could you give us a quick overview of who you are and what you do?
Yeah, so again, my name's Anna Edwards, and I am a conductor. I have been a violinist. I've been an educator for a really long time. I've been all over the map as far as my profession goes. I started out as a professional violinist in the Seattle area and New Mexico, and did that for quite a number of years, and then also went into teaching. So I taught in the public school system for over 20 years, and then I went into conducting and have done that for a long time now too. So I've kind of been all over the map in my profession.
What was it that prompted you to kind of switch into conducting as your main thing?
Well, I think the big thing was is when I was teaching, I had a really excellent high school, and my students were able to play a lot. And I also was a conductor for one of the youth symphonies, and I just got kind of the bug for wanting to do, you know, higher level repertoire, and and it fed my musicality heart. So it was great.
Yeah. Yeah. What did you do to start making that change? I know we have a lot of listeners that are music educators right now that are maybe wanting to step into the more professional world or tackle harder rep.
Yeah. The first thing I did was I started asking people what to do because I didn't really know. And I had some friends who encouraged me to go to some workshops. And so, one of my colleagues that I worked with the Seattle Symphony, he encouraged me to go to the Pierre Monteux School. And so, he wrote me a letter of reference, and I went that summer. So that's where
awesome.
I started.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yeah, I know a lot of people come out of Monteux. Neither of us has been, but I've had a lot of friends push me to apply.
You should definitely go. It's really fun. And it's a great place to be. Michael Jimbo is an absolute amazing pedagogue, and it's the feeling of camaraderie there is just terrific.
Awesome. Yeah, my two friends that were telling me were actually, they played in the orchestra. They weren't conductors, but they said that Michael was so great working with the conductors that I should go.
Super.
Yeah.
super intense, but absolutely fantastic.
Perfect. And so you're working with a lot of groups right now. Could you go through all the orchestras and projects you have going quick?
Sure. So I have two orchestras that I conduct on a regular basis. I conduct the Saratoga Orchestra, which is a professional ensemble, which is on Whidbey Island, which is pretty sweet because, you know, we all get to take the ferry over, and that's pretty awesome. So it's a group of wonderful musicians that are on the island, but also from the Seattle area, and it's a terrific ensemble. I also am the music director for the Seattle Collaborative Orchestra, which is an interesting and unusual ensemble. It has talented youth and community amateur musicians in it, and also it has professional musicians that play all together. So, you know, it's about a third. And the goal of the ensemble is to be a mentoring, you know, group for young people. And it's also an ensemble that performs traditional repertoire, but we also always perform a piece by a woman or a composer of color on each program.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. And I love the range of players you have in there. Is it difficult to program for that many players?
It's challenging. The reason why it started was it was kind of a side-by-side program on steroids. I was very lucky to be able to teach at one of the high schools that regularly performed with the Seattle Symphony on their side-by-side programs. And so when I was working on my doctorate, I decided that I needed to have an ensemble that would play some music that I wanted to do. And so I thought, well, I'm going to get my students and I'm going to get the Seattle Symphony people, because I have a bunch of friends who play there, and then a lot of my friends just in the community. And so we got together and made a big orchestra. It's been really fun.
Awesome. And maybe this can lead into one of the other topics we discussed earlier, but when you're putting those programs together, are you, you know, picking your main pieces and then finding that other piece, or are you starting with maybe a work by a underrepresented composer and then filling out things around it?
That's a great question. It just kind of depends. You know, Okay. Sometimes I will program a big piece. For example, we did the Hindemith Symphonic Metamorphosis last year, or a couple of years ago. And that was kind of the catching piece. And so I programmed other things that I thought would be really good flavors with that composition. One of the things that I'm really interested in doing is commissioning new pieces. And so one of the pieces that we commissioned was a piece called 1001 for Orchestra and Electronics by Leanna Primignani. And so Leanna and I got together and we were chatting about what would be really fun. And I asked her to, I thought it would be great for her to compose a piece with a piece that she really loved. And she ended up doing Scheherazade. And the thing that I thought was just the best thing ever was, first of all, it's a brilliant piece. It's a fantastic piece. But the second thing is that she wrote it in the perspective of Scheherazade and not from the prince. And so it's a great piece. It's a great story. And, so those are the kinds of things that I'm always looking for. Just interesting things, different ways to look at, different words, different themes, just trying to shake it up a bit.
Mm-hmm. What 1001 by, who is the composer?
Scheherazade. Yeah.
The new piece.
Korsakoff. Oh, sorry. Oh, her name is Leanna Primignani.
Leanna Primignani.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah.
That sounds fascinating. Yeah, I mean, everyone knows Scheherazade. And if she wrote an accompanying piece to Scheherazade, I like the spin of coming from her coming from her perspective.
Yeah, it's pretty intense, actually, because, you know, you think about 1001 Nights and, you know, you have the Scheherazade who's trying to save her life every single night. And, you know, people all think that this is a loving story. And it's like, you know, the guy was going to kill her.
Yeah.
You know, it's not really that sweet. And so Liana really, she just did a great job. And her piece is super cool. And sounds absolutely fantastic.
That's awesome. Is the recording anywhere? I'm really eager to hear it.
It's on YouTube. Yeah.
And that was with the Seattle Collaborative Orchestra.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. Perfect. We'll find the link. That sounds awesome.
Thank you. Yeah, it's great. It's a great piece.
Yeah. When you're working with commissioning, are these mostly composers that you know already, or are you meeting new people?
Usually it's with people that I know. You know, one of the things that I'm interested in typically is working with musicians that are in my sphere, you know,
yeah.
So in the Seattle area. That being said, Liana and I, we met because I played another composition that she wrote and I really liked it. And so I chatted with her one day. And so we just kind of were talking about stuff and she said, you know, I'd really like to write a piece for your group because I think it sounds cool. And so I said, well, that'd be awesome. And, you know, of course I have no idea how I'm going to do this, but, but anyway, we ended up, you know, talking about it over a couple of years and we ended up performing and it was a huge hit. You know, and as I say, it works really well with the Rimsky-Korsakov. It's just a terrific piece.
Yeah. Yeah. That's always nice when composers can match exactly with something that always gets performed, like the Korsakov, or some people have written companion pieces for, you know, the Brahms symphonies or something like that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And where do you, when you're finding these other pieces, where do you find them? I know you do the 10x10 lists for Everything Conducting, these lists of 10 pieces by underrepresented composers. Where are you finding those? How are you picking what's going on those lists?
Well, I do a lot of paying attention. You know, what I do really is I read a lot. I look at what other people are doing. I go to YouTube and I, you know, start listening to things and then something will pique my interest.
Mm-hmm.
A friend of mine will tell me about a composer that they've heard of. So I go check them out. And so my whole goal my dog just came in.
It was a ghost.
Yeah, right.
We regularly have dogs on our podcast, so with them.
Yeah, that's why I'm in the closet.
Yeah. Yeah, so anyway, I just, you know, I'm really fascinated by different people and their stories and the music that they write. And so one of the things that I was really frustrated about when I went back to school was that I really didn't know any composers that were female, mm-hmm. and I certainly didn't know very many that were of color. And so as I started playing music, I began to get really interested in these different voices. And the more that I have looked, the more shocked I am by the fact that we don't know about them. You know, there are amazing, amazing composers that have been around for a long time. You know, to name a few, Louise Ferranc, who is absolutely terrific. You know, I'd never even heard of her until a few years ago. And, you know, of course, Fanny Mendelssohn, Clara Schumann, those are big ones. But there's Marianne Martinez, who is fantastic. She lived, she was a student of Haydn's, actually. He lived upstairs from in her apartment, which is kind of neat. And, you know, there are all these other women that were just fantastic composers. Emily Mayer, Julia Perry. I mean, just great, great composers. And I was shocked that they didn't have more in the history books about them. And so I decided that was something I was interested in doing, is seeing who was really valid. And, you know, I mean, not everybody wrote a great music all the time, but some of them wrote some really great music that should definitely mm-hmm. be heard. You know, certainly one or two pieces, and you know, and they speak to different audiences. Different people like different things, and you know, that's what I'm always interested in finding.
Mm-hmm. One of the orchestras I work with did the Franck, the second overture, a couple weeks mm-hmm. ago, and it was so nice. The score was a little expensive, but,
super expensive.
Very yeah. expensive, yeah, but it's really great music.
Yeah, first awesome. Symphonies are fantastic. The Third Symphony is absolutely glorious, yeah. And, you know, she wrote a couple of string quartets, and I always get cracked up. Have you heard her piano quintet?
I haven't heard any else of her.
Her second piano quintet, this should be on your listening list, is the NPR theme.
Oh.
And yeah, and so it's so funny because people know who Louise Franck and they don't even know it.
Yeah.
But anyway, she wrote beautiful, beautiful chamber music and just great. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad that you were able to play.
It was great. Yeah. And then last year we did the Clara Schumann Piano Concerto, which was also an absolute delight.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's so much great music that's just sitting there.
Super. Ethel Smythe. Yeah. I mean, there are just so many great mm-hmm. composers.
Well, and with technology these days, it's made it so easy to find these people. Like, you know, even on Spotify, that's where I found so many of the composers that you just mentioned, in that mm-hmm. They put lists together of female composers, which we typically wouldn't listen to. And so, you know, it's kind of helping us also, like YouTube is helping a lot, you know, because I can't.
Oh, it's great.
So many hours spent on YouTube doing exactly what you said, you know, going through mm-hmm. and then there's something on the side. Oh, that looks interesting. And then you just find yourself going deeper and deeper. And
Mm-hmm. Lots of rabbit holes.
Yeah. So yeah. Could you tell us about these 10x10 lists and then also your 100 days of socially distanced listening?
Yeah, sure. I'm going to start with the listening, the 100 days first, because the reason why I started doing the 10x10 was because of that list. So when we started this COVID thing, it was funny because I'm sure you all know what I'm talking about, but on Facebook, there were these, you know, name your top 10 albums that saved your life or, you know, made an influence on your life or whatever. And so I thought, well, you know, I'm going to write about the 10 pieces that I thought were really cool. So I started, you know, writing about 10 compositions that I have played over the last few years by composers. And then we were still in lockdown. I was like, okay. So I just kept writing. And, you know, by day 33, I was like, wow, this is a bummer. But at the same time, I'm really enjoying doing this. So I just kept going. And so I thought, you know, around 70, I was getting pretty tired of it. But I thought, well, I'm going to see if I can make it to 100. And so I did, and you know, I wasn't sure I was going to be able to find enough good music, and I just kept finding more and more and more and more great music. And it was funny because, you know, before the end of my list was when I found some of my recent most favorite composers. Joycelyn Morlock was in there. Augusta Reed Thomas was in there. Sarah Kirkland Snyder was in there. You know, I had never even heard of these people, and they are fantastic. Derek Spiva Jr., he was awesome. James Holland. I found all these people, and, you know, again, that propelled me to do the first 100. And then once I did that, then I started getting some phone calls, or, you know, people started writing me and saying, hey, have you heard about anybody who has written any holiday tunes? Or do you know anyone who's done a really good concerto? And so then I thought, well, maybe what I'm going to do is I'm going to start thinking about, you know, what are some really great concertos, or where, you know, who's written some good holiday tunes. And which brings me to another thing. When I started reading and researching about this, I realized that there were not a lot of pieces that I could find that were written by women or composers of color on holiday tunes. So anyway, which prompted me to send an email out to some of my friends that, you know, my composer friends. And it was really funny because as soon as I did that, one of my colleagues wrote a piece. And just 2 days ago, a conductor said, "Do you know of any pieces?" And I said, "Well, yes, I do. And here it is." And so he's going to be performing this on his holiday concert this year. Awesome. And so, you know, for me, the thing that I find really fun and very interesting is finding those pieces that are super valuable that would really work well with ensembles. And, you know, different parts of the country, I think, you know, again, I'll go back to where I was talking about earlier. You know, I like to play things that are around my area because I like to show off the talent in our area. Well, there's talent all over the country. And so, you know, it's fun to be able to find these different talented people who, you know, live in the Northeast or the Southwest or, you know, wherever. And it's fun to be able to find compositions that would work really well with different ensembles. And so anyway, that's been something that for me has been very fun to do. So that's where the 10 by 10 came from was, I you see, know, yeah. 10 holiday tunes or 10 concertos or 10 string quartets or 10, you know, whatever.
I love that that was prompted by people seeing you as a resource to find these more and more of these pieces.
Yeah, it was great. I really appreciated it. Mm-hmm.
And were those original for Everything Conducting? Like, were you doing that on the website for the website, or did you do them somewhere else and then move them on?
No, I did it. I had been working on this database for years. Okay. I've been doing this database forever, and it prompted me to actually do it and get it done. So that's what I did. So when I started working with Ankush, Enrico, and John, that's when I made myself actually get everything organized and put together.
Yeah, awesome. So that's an incredible list, anyone who's listening, just for composers and pieces and just about everything. Just about Everything Conducting.
Oh, yeah. It's a great website. It's a definitely good website. Lots of smart people there, and a lot of people have brought in articles that, you know, from, you know, starting a string ensemble in middle school to, you know, being a cover conductor to assistant conductor. It's all great, great material.
Yeah, absolutely. And so let's talk about the workshop, the Pacific Northwest Conducting
sure.
Institute. I've had a bunch of people tell me to go here as well.
Yeah, you should. It's great. It's really, really wonderful. We're going to have another one in January.
Awesome. Yeah. So where did this start? This is with Saratoga, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. And so my favorite part about it is, I have several favorite parts. First of all, it's a pleasure to work with Diane Wittry.
Absolutely.
It's so fun to work with her. I think we make really good teammates. So I really like that. The second thing that is wonderful is that it's on gorgeous Whidbey Island. And so the thing that I enjoy is that when we do it, it's a week-long program, and all of the conducting fellows and associates get to come and stay with, you know, people on the island. Okay. And it's super quaint. And, you know, in normal times, we get to go and have coffee and dinner and go to the pub, and it's really nice. It's a beautiful, walkable community, and in the summers, it's glorious there. So that's been really fun. We just finished our fourth year. We did it online this year, of course. But we have a full orchestra, and again, it goes along with the same principles that, you know, I normally have. And, you know, we do solid rep, you know, things that people need to do because they audition on it. But we also always bring in, you know, female composers specifically, for that program. And, you know, again, one of my things going forward is I'm really pushing to have a diverse program on all of my programs. So I'm sure we will be doing that too with with those folks.
Mm-hmm. So it's you and Diane teaching, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Luke unmuted. He was going to ask something.
I'm just trying to figure out if I was actually unmuted or not. Well,
okay.
I have a really good friend here in town. She came in to do her master's here at MSU my last year of my master's. Her name was Alexandra Kovach, and she went to the program last year, I think it was. And
she's terrific.
Yeah, all she talked about the whole rest of the summer was how much she loved it and how I need to go.
Yeah. She did a great job. It was really fun. She did the Rossini and she did a fantastic job. Yeah. Well, it's a lot of fun. You know, we've been, it's been great to be able to have a variety of levels there. And it's always fun to watch how people come in and where they grow, you know, in just a week. And the nice thing about this program is that, you know, we start with a string quartet and piano at the beginning, and then the ensemble is a full orchestra. And so it's nice to be able to actually have an ensemble that you can work with. And the musicians love it. You know, it's just great. The community really loves it. So it's a very positive and wonderful place to be. And again, it's a treat to work with Diane, and I think both of us bring different, you know, of our ideals, you know, to students, and hopefully we're able to impart some information that will be helpful along mm-hmm. folks' journey.
I'm curious what the two different approaches are, the two different ideals.
I think that Diane is, she is brilliant about having specific structure on how to think about things. She's really good. You know, she's written her books. You know, her books are used all over the country, you know, in conducting seminars and classes, and they should be. They're absolutely terrific. You know, she works so well with the orchestra, and she has such a beautiful way of you know, talking with the students and engaging them and encouraging them to do what they need to do to make a difference.
Awesome. So you get to work with Anna and Diane, and you get to take the ferry in, I presume.
Oh yeah.
Under the island.
Well, yeah. It's only, well, you can go over a beautiful bridge or
that'd be
take
nice
the ferry.
That'd be great. Yeah. So then I'm hoping we can move on to your, I'm very interested in your dissertation and your research in female conductors as well. You know, again, this podcast is very much about the education of conductors. Luke and I started it because there was a lot of stuff that we just didn't get to cover in school. And we thought that calling people and hanging out with them for a little bit was the best way for us to learn those things, and hopefully for everyone else too as well. Could you give us an overview, and then we can dig into some of the specifics?
Sure. So my dissertation is entitled Gender and the Symphonic Conductor. And basically what I did was I did an overview, a historical overview of women early on. And then I went into the statistics that were happening while I was writing my dissertation. One of the fun things that I did in doing the dissertation was that I did an ethnography in addition to writing the statistical part of the dissertation. And so I did a lot of questions and from the conductors that were at the Pierre Monteux School. Mm-hmm. So I started it all by going to the Monteux School, taking all of these questions and finding specific things that people were interested in and, you know, themes that came up. And then once I did that, then I came up with questions, and then I had I sent out these questionnaires to all of the professional orchestras across the country. Mm-hmm. And then I got data back from them. And then from that data, then I put together, you know, some of, I mean, it's been a long time since I've even looked at it, to tell you the truth. But what, some of the things that came up with it were that, you know, gender does make a difference. I think that things are changing, but I still think that there are certain things that are different, you know, from people. The way that they perceive things. One of the folks that I interviewed for this, who is actually a concertmaster at one of the major orchestras in the U.S., he said to me one time, he said, okay, let me see if I can do it right. Perception is, let's see, oh, I should go look this up. I can't remember, but he said there's definitely a difference in perspective of, you know, when a woman walks up on a podium, you know, you're going to perceive them as being something. So it doesn't matter what they do, you're going to have a different perspective of what they're doing. And so anyway, I should have looked that up before I talked to you. But anyway, some of the things that came up from the dissertation were, you know, the way we dress, the way that we do our hair, the way we, you know, get in front of an ensemble. And I have to say that, you know, when I first did it, I had a little bit of a chip on my shoulder. It was like, I'm going to do whatever I want. But, you know, as I've researched things and I've, you know, watched people over the years and watched young people, you know, and just seen the differences in different people's careers, I have to say that I think it's important people recognize that the way that you present yourself is super important. And that's just the way it is. So then once you show other people what you're going to represent, whatever that means for you, you have to be really comfortable and really solid in that representation. So whether it's clothing, whether it's makeup, whether it's high heels, whether it's a skirt, whether it's whatever, you have to be comfortable in that situation, you know, in order for you to be an effective leader. And, you know, as conductors, that's what we are. We're leaders. You get up on a podium, you know, for crying out loud, you know, and you're telling people what to do. So when you do that, you have to make sure that you're aware that you are giving a large ensemble, a large group of people, they are looking at you. You have to make sure that you feel comfortable in that role. And you also want to be a good representative of what a leader means for that ensemble. Mm-hmm. So anyway, the dissertation was quite interesting. There were lots of things that were, that came out of it that I wasn't anticipating.
Yeah.
You know, for example, one of the, statistics that was very clear in the research that also was clear in other research that I had read was that once an ensemble has a female conductor, they no longer really care whether it's a female or a male. And I thought that was really interesting. There were some other things that were interesting. It's twice as people pay attention to female dress twice as much as they do for men.
Oh yeah.
And you know, it's like, is she wearing heels or is she wearing a dress or, you know, whatever. And it, you know, again, I personally believe that people can wear what they are comfortable with as long as they're comfortable really with it.
Yeah.
I do think that, you know, people always talk about distractions and things like that. Well, you know, you want to be mindful about if it's destructive, you know, if you're doing things that are going to be a distraction for other people, you have to be mindful of that, period. If you're a decent leader, you're going to pay attention to that. And then let's see what else. I'm trying to think of what else. As I say, I haven't thought about it in a while. Oh, I know one that you guys will appreciate. So I talked with this gal, Kate Tamarkin, who was a conducting professor, and she actually gave me one of my very best bits of information. And this is true, I think, for anyone. But she was talking about the difference between men and women conductors in their body types.
Okay.
And she described it in relation to a triangle. So you know how the flat part of the triangle, you know, is flat on top. She equated men's bodies with the triangle with the flat part at the top because they're really strong in their shoulders. You know, that's where they carry a lot of their strength. And she said with women, it's opposite. So the bottom part, you know, is where they carry their strength. So where their hips are. And I thought, you know, that is so brilliant because for me, I believe very strongly that people carry their strength in different ways. Mm-hmm. And I do think that women do carry their strength in lower, a little bit lower than men do. Or at least I think that they can get away with it. You know, I think that it feels more comfortable. And so once she said that to me, that was really when I began to really understand where my strength was, and I felt very comfortable. You know, I mean, I feel like I could do, you know, I feel like I could conduct anything, you know, if at that point, I don't know if I would conduct anything, but you know, I feel like I could, you know, but, anyway, I just thought that was such a great thing to say. So I really appreciated her, talking with me about that. And it made a huge difference for me. That was one of the first times that I had personally ever spoken to another female conductor. You know, I didn't know any women conductors when I was doing my doctorate. Mm-hmm. So,
What I loved about your research was that there were a lot of, you know, there's all the perception thing, and that's a whole discussion. But even like you were just saying with the triangle, just some physiological differences, but if nobody thinks that there's any difference between men and women physically, you know, they don't think to ever teach it, and they, you know, they keep saying, you know, move your arms higher, but maybe that's not what works. So I mean, just that little tip, just that little I guess evidence that there is actually a difference, and we should accept that and you know, do what we can. And
Yeah, and you know, again, you know, different people have different body types, and you know, again, that one of the fun things for me as being an educator is, you know, when I watch all of these different conductors, you know, it's not like all men are huge. You know, there's a lot of people who, you know, have slight figures, and you know, they also bring their weight a little lower. And, you know, it's not like this is a one fits all solution.
Yeah.
And but I think for me, it made me begin to realize that there's a different way to interpret body language, and to think that maybe what has been standardly said over the years may not necessarily be true so much anymore, you know, as people go on. And, you know, again, it's been, I'll go back to Diane and how fun it's been to work with her. She's tall and slender, right? And I'm short, and I'm very, you know, I'm not a tall person at all. I'm maybe 5'3". You know, it's interesting because our bodies, the way that she conducts is very different than the way that I conduct. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. And so, you know, it's like looking at different people who are super tall, you know, versus shorter. And, you know, there are some people who are hefty and some people who are super thin. And the way they carry their bodies is all different, but they can all bring really awesome music to their gesture. Mm-hmm. They just have to learn how to be comfortable in that.
Yeah, and I think embracing that individuality of each person and kind of being, what it sounds like to me is like, it's like everybody was allowed to now do what's comfortable instead of what they think they should be doing, which was what was taught. I remember just specifically at going to a workshop, it was two male conductors. One was very short and had short arms, and the other one was very tall and had very long arms. And they had to conduct very different way. The short guy, like, he had to make bigger movements because he was a tiny guy. But the other guy had very long arms, and anything he did was so much. He had to be very careful because even a small gesture looked like he was doing something wild, and it was such a weird dichotomy there. But to see that, and to see the two totally different physiologies, that you know they have to do what works best for their body and their build, and everybody should do it what works best for them.
Yeah.
One of the things that really struck me was, I mean, just all the little things that you wouldn't think about. I liked the section. I think you were asking about adjectives, like balanced and aggressive, and all of these, and just how people would describe different female or male conductors and whether they liked them or not. I mean, just seeing that obviously, and like that. Saying that women should only conduct like feminine music like Debussy, but men can conduct whatever. It's like there are a lot of little things that I didn't think about that, you know, it seems like, well, obviously that's not true. But maybe we've been programmed to think it, because I've played with a couple female conductors, but I mean, of course, definitely not as many male.
It's interesting. First of all, thank you for reading. Oh my gosh, it's been a long time since I've even thought about my dissertation. You're totally on it. That's great. So one of the things that I just was going to tell you, if you don't mind me telling you a little story. So after I finished the dissertation, I had to do this lecture I didn't have to, but I was invited to do this lecture at Oxford. And so when I went, I was getting my stuff together, and I had never ever given a lecture before. And I was like, okay, so I'm gonna go to Oxford my first time. That was such a mistake. So anyway, but it was really fun and I enjoyed it. But when I was getting prepared for it, one of the articles that I read, you know, that I was trying to figure out, was this article about this professor who did this study about Heidi Roizen, who was she's a business executive in Silicon Valley. And so Heidi, what he did was he had his class take a survey on all of these traits about her, right? So what he did was he gave these questions about, you know, how they liked her, and, you know, what kind of person they, you know, leader they thought she was, how would they like her for a manager and everything. So he gave half of the class Heidi Roizen's, information. And the interesting part was that he gave the other half of the class Howard Roizen's information. And it was really interesting because after it, you know, the answers came in, you know, they thought both of them were super smart and everything, but they didn't like Heidi because she was just too aggressive and they didn't want her as a boss. And, you know, they thought that Howard was cool and they wanted to go out and have beer with him. But, you know, Heidi was just too gripey. And anyway, it was just really interesting to think about people's perspective. And so one of the things that I find really interesting about the way that I look at things and the way that I'm trying to, I guess, evoke my principles, is that I'm trying really hard to, you know, I'm trying not to make it a female agenda or a person of color agenda. And I know that I am, because obviously I'm making this list, right? But I guess the thing for me is that, you know, when I play music, I want to play a diverse plate of music. I don't want to just play women. I don't want to just play people of color. I don't want to play just white, you know, men. I want to play a diverse population of musicians so you can hear the different awesomeness that each person brings to the fore, right? Yeah. And so, you know, one of the things that I feel really strongly about is thinking about this perception and thinking about how we look at musicians and people and, you know, are they too tall or are they too short, or do they have brown skin or do they have you know, really white skin, or do they have beautiful, you know, this color of hair, or, you know, it doesn't even matter, right? I mean, it does matter, because their history obviously is an important part of it. But, you know, what is interesting for me is, at the end of the day, I want to listen to what they have to say and what their history brings, you know, to the stage. Mm-hmm. So anyway, yeah. So perception, it's a really interesting thing.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. It's I've heard of that study or something similar with it, with the resume. And it's crazy how we can take the same information and color it in totally different ways. I just loved it. So what advice, you know, all the research you've done, what advice would you give to young female conductors? We'll start with at the beginning of the career. I mean, things have changed somewhat, but I think they're still changing. So what advice would you send out to our listeners?
Well, I think the biggest thing that I would say is that, you really need to find comfort in who you are. You know, there's great leadership in different types of behaviors. You know, you can be a super funny person. I am so not funny, but I'm who I am. You know, this is who it is. You know, this is what you got. And there are some people who are very shy, not shy, but maybe they're very quiet and they're very intense. You know, but they can be amazing leaders. You can have people who are really loud and who are aggressive. And even though they may be aggressive, you may think that they're a great leader, right? And so I think that if people are comfortable in whatever way that they feel that they can get the information across, I think that that's a really important thing. The other part that I think is the most important, and this is true for everyone, though, you got to find a great mentor. You got to find somebody who is going to be helpful to you and be truthful, honest, and help you along your journey. You know, I think that that's a very important part of conducting, but that's for anybody. It doesn't matter who it is.
Who is that mentor for you?
You know, I really didn't have one as a conductor, you know, it was hard, you know, Michael Jimbo, I think, was, somebody who I've respected and I've appreciated, you know, as a teacher. I didn't really have a mentor that like really helped me with my stuff. You know, I had a lot of really great colleagues that, I did. I also started late. So, you know, I think maybe my age may have had a little bit to do with that, because, you know, I wasn't young. So, but I've had a lot of really great colleagues who have been terrific, you know, along the way, and I'm very appreciative of them.
As someone who got a late start myself, I always enjoy finding people that, you know, have found success even though they started later.
Yeah.
So,
I wonder if there are any things, one of our general questions was, what's something you've changed your mind about, or what's a new realization you've had in the past couple of years?
I guess, you know, for me, I would say that everybody brings something, you know, to the fore. And again, you know, when I look at different ways of leading, and I will say that's been kind of my big primary thing, I guess, recently that I would say. That I've been thinking a lot about is just the way different people are able to bring their leadership and the way that they're able to make things happen. You know, I think our society has an idea of what leadership looks like, and I don't think that that's necessarily right. We need to have a lot of different types of leaders. We need to have the ones that are leaders who know how to go out and get things done. We need to have the leaders who are super innovative and can be really forward thinking. We need to have the leaders who can rally people around them, who are super conscientious about their environment, you know, their place in the world. You know, we need to have leaders who are able to be systematic in the way that they do things, you know. So there's a lot of different ways to lead. And I think for me, that has been something that I've appreciated paying attention to. And I've really enjoyed watching different people who I think are terrific, terrific leaders, who might not be someone who you might think is a leader. You know, so like some of the folks that I've been enjoying watching, you know, for example, students, or some of my students that I've watched, you know, get older, go through school. Some of my colleagues who are teachers, who when they first started, they started out as in one place, and they've kind of grown into a different type of leader where I wasn't expecting them to go. So I think that for me, just looking at different ways of leadership styles has been fun.
Are you doing any playing, conducting? Is anything happening over there for you?
Yeah. So one of the things that I'm doing, which I'm really excited about, to tell you the truth, it's not great, but it's pretty good. So we're using my Seattle Collaborative Orchestra ensemble. There's about 40 of us, because not everybody can do it, but we've all started using this program called Jamulus, which is this open source program. And it's based off of this technology called JackTrip that was started at Stanford University. And what it is that you have to wear headphones, you have to use an Ethernet, you need to really have a microphone. And it allows you to be able to use your computer as a sound device, to where you can hear with minimal latency.
Okay.
And so we're actually rehearsing together.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so it's pretty interesting. Now, that being said, it's not perfect. And it's a big learning curve to learn how to rehearse with your ears and not your eyes.
Yeah.
Because you can use Zoom like as a personal thing to see people, but you can't rely on it for time.
No.
And so it's been very interesting to watch our ensemble kind of go from the first day, which was utter chaos, to where, you know, people are actually rehearsing now, which is fun.
Wow.
Now, we're not doing full orchestra pieces, but we are doing chamber music. And, you know, we're learning. It's a big learning curve. So anyway, that's something fun. At least we're getting to play some music. So that's nice.
Yeah, yeah. What was the name of the program again?
It's called, we're using a Jamulus, Jamulus, and it's based off of this program called JackTrip, and there's a great video on YouTube. I think it has McBride, what's his name, the bass player, he's so great. I think he's talking about JackTrip.
Yeah.
And Christian McBride, and they're talking about latency in this program. It's pretty interesting.
The one thing I noticed when all these orchestras and groups were doing this, you know, record your own part and then send it in and we'll splice it. And I was like, just the articulations aren't even, all these, you know, all these little things that you don't get that feedback from somebody else. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you don't really, you know, I mean, this is not perfect. You don't have exact, you know, it's not
okay.
Exact by any stretch. But it's minimal latency, so like people are able to actually play chamber music together.
Wow.
You know, so it's been fun. We're going to play. We are going to do in small parts. We're going to put together Kinji Bunch has a piece called Songs of Sasquatch, and so it's a great, it's super fun piece. So we're doing Love in the Time of COVID as our first concert. And so we're playing Sasquatch in Love, which is the first movement of his piece. It's a really fun piece. So we're going to put it together in parts, you know, just because I'm not sure we're going to be able to get 40 people on the same platform.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
yeah, that's tough.
Yeah.
Darn it. Symphonies are just too big now, aren't they?
I know. It's too big.
The thing.
Yeah, so on my 10 by 10, there's going to be less than 10 people, 10 to 25.
Awesome.
Another reason to go back to that database, or, you know, the social listening project.
Yeah. Luke, do you want to get us started heading towards the end?
I guess my last question was, and you kind of already answered it, but I'm really big into lesser known composers, especially I do enjoy modern music, but I really love the classical and romantic era of these composers, especially like women composers that just literally never got their time in the concert hall. And I just love finding them. And so what are just a couple works that we don't know from those eras that you've discovered and you think stand next to Beethoven and Mozart?
Well, Lily Boulanger is one that is absolutely fantastic. Louise Ferranc, I think, is absolutely fantastic. I think that Ina Boyle is a really great composer. She's a Scottish composer. She was terrific. Vitslava Kaprilova is really great. Let me think. Do you want just women?
Sure.
Florence Price is fabulous. Samuel Coleridge Taylor, William Dawson, Margaret Bonds was fabulous. She wrote one of the most beautiful pieces, holiday shows, and I'm trying to remember. I can't remember the name of it. Oh my gosh, it's so beautiful. I can't remember the title of it. I'm so sorry, but it's on my database. I'll have to think about it. Samuel Coleridge Taylor, he's great. You know, just a lot of those folks were just so terrific. I think Samuel Coleridge Taylor is one, is certainly should be known in the Romantic era. I just think he was fantastic.
Have you heard about Marcel Tyberg at all?
Who?
Marcel Tyberg.
No, tell me.
Oh, well, you should look him up. Joanne Folletta did some recordings of his music in the early 2000s, and she premiered the first recordings and of the works, because it was all music that a friend of his brought forward, because he was taken to a concentration camp. He was Jewish, and he was taken to a concentration camp during the Holocaust and just never came back. And so this friend just had all of his music that Tyberg brought to him before they came to pick him up. And so this guy, you know, brought it forward, and they're performing his stuff now, and it's really, really fascinating. And he's obviously heavily influenced by Mahler, but he has his own little intricate things in there that make it kind of unique. And I did my master's thesis on, he did a completion of Schubert 8 for a competition. And so I got to find his manuscript and redo it. He's really fascinating. He's a composer that I am championing. anyway, but yeah, it's great. So you should listen to him for sure.
Oh, that's so great. So how do you spell his last name?
T-Y-B-E-R-G.
E-R-G, okay. I will check him out. Absolutely. Yeah, no, I always want people to tell me who to look. Because, you know, I, it's fun for me to be able to go and, you know, figure it out.
Yeah.
A little bit more.
Alrighty then Anna, our final question is our billboard. If you could put a message on a billboard to send out to all our listeners, whether that's advice or a question, just something to send everyone off on, what would you send out?
Expected diversity on the concert stage allows us to hear the best and the brightest of our musical community.
I love it. Thank you so much. Yeah, this has been great. A pleasure. Thank you again for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much. I really had a nice time. Thanks.
Awesome.
Thanks so much for joining us for this episode of Podium Time. You can find everything in the show notes below, and please reach out if you have any suggestions for guests or improvements to the podcast. We're always striving to make Podium Time the best podcast that we can for you conductors and students, so send us a Facebook message or use the contact page on our website with any suggestions you may have. Thanks so much for listening to this episode, and we'll see you next time. Mendelssohn's Italian Symphony was performed by the Czech National Symphony Orchestra, and Beethoven's Egmont Overture was performed by Stefano Ligurati.